Hello and welcome to the Lightning Talk session. We're about to start. The first talk is about From Chair Audio, and he's already here signing our new and updated data retention policy. GDPR. Okay, getting full in here, that's good. So I hope you will enjoy the Lightning Talks. The camera has been adjusted. I hope the stream is all nice and good. You can switch with the Pfeiltasten. Up and down, glaube ich. Zum Ausprobieren. Ja, geht. So, dann gebe ich dir jetzt das
Mikro. Yeah, hello. Okay, thank you very much for having me. And I will open the Lightning Talks with my presentation of this instrument here. And Chair Audio is a couple of people, and two of them are here today. Clemens will show up later, I think. And Sebastian cannot be here. And there's a couple of more people in the extended network, like Björn Lindig and Philipp Schmalfuß, who contributed patches for our instrument. So what we are doing, we are making digital instruments with a kind of an analog interface. And the idea is to create a kind of a hybrid between a controller and an instrument, because here the surface actually is excitable. There is a microphone in the surface and the XY controller combined. So you create a data stream of the control data, the position on the surface, and the audio signal, which is then fed into the audio synthesis. So you can use the hand to trigger it, or you can bow on the here to put vibrations on the surface and so forth. Here in this case, in this illustration, you see, for example, a implementation of a mass spring model where the vibration is put into one of the nodes of this mass spring model, and that's going to sound like a metal plate, for example, here. And the effect is somehow like an acoustic looking glass. Like ideally we want to hear, if there's an ant walking over this surface, you want to hear this like a elephant going through the woods or something like this. And depending on the audio synthesis, this can lead to a very extreme range of possible timbres and mapping flexibility. This is not something entirely new. In fact, there's a paper and a patent by Perry Cook, which is going to run out in 2 years. So that's going to be free. And this is an illustration from that patent application. So you see a control rate signal and an audio rate signal combined to create an audio synthesis. That's our instrument. Actually, I can maybe give it around if somebody wants to have a look at it. And there's another version which integrates into an analog synthesizer, and you have the outputs of the XY surface as control voltage and excitation signal, which is basically the microphone or the vibrations sensor in the surface. And what's in it? In it is same as the Snyderphonics Manta also using. It's a Cypress chip, PSoC 5. And that is a very nice chip because it has analog and digital components. And first we experimented with a libUSB implementation from the device driver, and now we are using a kernel module. And yeah, it's Linux only for the moment, but will be extended at some point. Some possible and implemented synthesis models are here, like Carpal Strong, very easy one. This can actually be implemented on the PSoC, and some more complex ones like PMPD tilde, or physical modeling with SynthModeler, which is was presented here a couple of weeks back, years back by Edgar Berdahl, and Peter Vasil wrote the SynthModeler Designer And this is quite outdated, but on our GitHub you will find an updated version that is running with the current versions of Faust and Juice and so forth. And thank you.
Thank you for your talk. Next up is mine, but you may have already noticed that software just completely messed with it. So I'm going to show you the slides, but they will be boring because you can't really see what's this all about. But my talk's about Evio. Evio is audio video input output. That's what it stands for, and it's used as general processing software to mix and mingle all these formats. You can process video, live video, graphics, audio signals, not yet, but it can produce audio signals already. And you can read MIDI data, you can send MIDI data, you can... One very important thing which I wanted to demonstrate, because it's one of the coolest features actually, is you can read out game controller data, like for example a six-axis controller from that PlayStation thingy. It has 27 analog axes. That's not just buttons. You can measure how deep the button is being pressed continuously. So you can modulate lots of audio signals with that. And also it has a six-axis controller, an accelerometer inside. So what I did and wanted to demonstrate today is to control the pitch of a synthesizer by this accelerometer, so you can do a perfect vibrato by just wiggling it. And you can determine the amplitude or the frequency by being fast or slow. It's pretty dynamic. And also there's lots of other things you can control with the buttons. So the general functionality is described by multiplexing data and giving you ways to write simple components that can react on other inputs and actually transform them into something meaningful for the new format. One thing you can do with it, I mentioned, is process video material. And you can, one thing I did was real-time mix six full HD scaled GIF animateds, and that works rather smooth. Another thing you can do is generate video for this device, for the Martellite, which is 16 by 40, it's, and it has 32 bits colors, 100 hertz, so you can do very interesting animations on that, and you can also have text scrollers or whatnot. And you can also use the picture you're transporting to the projector, for example, scale it down and have it running on that one as well. Recently I integrated Pi-O, which means I can now do sound synthesis with it. I've just begun that. There's a graphical live mixing interface, so you can actually control what you're doing and have some influence. It's a little bit like Pure Data, but way more alpha. It's just this project has seen only a few days of development so far. Then also there's a HTML5 based configuration interface, which has more complex stuff. You can pre-process queues and metadata and whatnot on that one. Slides are a little bit off. This user interface I was talking about is the same one which is actually running on the live.linuxaudio.org instance here, because it's actually essentially it's the same system. And the front end is AngularJS based. You have seen it; it runs in the browser, so it uses HTML5, and the back end is written in Python. So yeah, I'm doing full screen, full HD, real-time video mixing in Python. Anybody who says Python is slow, no, it isn't. It eats RAM like 12 gigabytes or something. Okay, it's written in Python 3, so and it's modular. You can extend it in any way and add components. It's event-based, so that's the demo time. Actually, you would just run the software, have a routing table where you could match the signals from your controller to a MIDI CC channel, for example. And just I could have used some other software, but I wasn't prepared to actually do that. So With that you can actually one idea is to have controllers on a microphone so you can actually modulate your voice while you're singing, for example. Or you could add a remote on your guitar neck and have it point at the transmitting end so you can actually like live jam all the modulation out of it. I still have a minute. Okay. The software is, like I mentioned, it's a rough draft, at least this part, the multimedia software. It's on GitHub, it's open source. And yeah, if you'd like to contribute or check it out, please check out the repository, or if you have any more questions, you can ping me anytime or send me an email. And yeah, sorry for the missing demo. I hope I can get these audio problems under control. Okay, that's my lightning talk. Thank you. Next up, the DJs. Why the world's worst turntables work wonders with X-Wax. Hello.
Do you have the slides?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool. So, hello everyone. Ever since I was a little kid, I wanted to be a DJ. And now I'm a sort of grown up. I do DJ workshops for young people, children. And there are a couple of problems with that. One is that the music that they like is not available on analog vinyl. It comes from SoundCloud or YouTube or whatever. And the other thing is that although the Technics turntable is back in production, they now cost a couple of thousand euros each. And it's not affordable for a lot of young people. So these really bad turntables are sold in supermarkets. This one comes from Aldi and retails of 20 something euros, I think. It's really, really bad. But happily, we can make it work with X-Wax running on the Raspberry Pi here. X-Wax runs on any kind of PC, but we're using the Pi for portability and because it's easy to hack on. So, what do you have to do? So first of all, take the lid, throw it away. It just gets in the way. Then you'll find on the platter, which is made of plastic, there are some rubber nipples because there's no rubber mat. All the cost is engineered out of these things. So, you know, if they can use less, they will. So you take out the rubber nipples, throw those away. You might need some tape around the spindle because they're so badly made that they're often too small. They're undersized and your record will wobble from side to side. So we don't want that. Next thing, a wax paper. This is the secret thing. This is from the kitchen drawer. You just cut out a circle, put it on there. This reduces friction. And a slip mat. This is just made from a piece of felt. Again, it's undersized, so we just need to get our scissors and cut that out there. Okay, so that's that part. Then we take the control vinyl. You can use any kind of control vinyl with X-Wax, but Serato vinyl is very nice, and it comes in this 10-inch size, which is smaller than standard, so it fits on the smaller turntable. Let's have side A. Okay, so hopefully the audio is on, and you press the button, it goes around, and we put it to 33 RPM, and we put the little needle. This is very, very loose. I don't know if you can see that, but that's very, very loose. And this is why these are very bad at playing analog records, because the mechanical engineering is just not really good enough to track the waveform, okay? So, yeah, well, that just kills the needle, unfortunately. So what we're doing here is we're taking the control signal and we're playing it into the sound card on the Raspberry Pi, which is an I2S sound card from audioinjector.net, made by a guy in Australia called Matt Flax. And then we're converting that time code into a position for the player, which is just decoding your audio files, turning them into raw PCM data, and putting them in RAM. And what it means is as I move this record, I can use it just like it was a real analog record with very low latency. So, like that. See? And if it skips out of the needle, that's out of the groove, that's what happens if you're too heavy-handed. So when I do the workshops with the kids, I say, gotta be very gentle, And the worse the turntable is, the more gentle you have to be because of the bad mechanical engineering. But it does actually work. So you can scratch. You can find those kick drum beats. This is the first beat of the bar. And you can hook it up to this little mixer here and just use it like a regular turntable, but it's all pocket money stuff. So yeah, that's my talk. If there's any questions, I'll be around later. So thank you.
Thank you very much. So next talk is Hacking My Hearing. That's geschafft.
Yeah, mal gucken.
Du hattest Folie? Hattest du eine Folie?
Ja. Die habe ich dir gerade als E-Mail geschickt.
We will be able to start the recognition or the something, so this thing. You are now live in talk.
Yeah, do you have the meter check?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, you can pop it into the chat. Nee, das ist ja blöd, dann wird dir die Zeit verloren.
Na, ich brauche ja eh mehr Zeit.
Wie groß ist das denn? The download, you forgot. Sorry, I have to download something here. Yeah. I'm not so exactly perfectly prepared, I have to admit. Okay, here we go. Nice. I'm still lacking a shortcut. So if anybody knows the author of this software, I need a key shortcut for this button. There you go. Yeah.
There you go. All right. Hello, everybody. My name is Maximilian Wagenbach. I'm also known as Foley Online or at Chaos Events. And I just got asked to do this lightning talk yesterday, so I'm a bit nervous and not very well prepared. And I think I'm going to run out of time at some point, but bear with me. All right, so I'm a Bachelor of Computer Science, and I'm now a student of audio technology at the TU Berlin. Yeah, and I wanted to talk to you about hacking my hearing, because unfortunately last September I lost a hearing in my right ear, and it didn't come back, so we decided to go ahead and get a cochlear implant. I don't know who of you know this, but it's a wonders of the modern medicine and our public healthcare system, really. so yeah, cochlear implant. A cochlear implant is a hearing aid for the profoundly deaf. So if you're completely deaf, and the hair cells inside my cochlea are broken, but the nerve connecting the cochlea to the brain still works. So this implant has two parts. The one part you see on the left is the side that's actually implanted, and it has this little curvy thing that I always describe as a silicone glass noodle, and it has like lots of tiny electrodes on it, and that one's actually inserted inside your cochlea, and then pulses the nerves that are surrounding that part. And yeah. And then it's connected to that bigger part that sits behind my ear, fixed to the skull. And that consists of a coil and a weak magnet. And yeah, I got this implanted 2 weeks ago. And I'll be going back next week for a checkup. And then the week after, I'll get the outside part, which does the actual work. Because all the part inside is passive. And the outside part also has a coil and a weak magnet. So once everything's healed up, the two magnets keep the coils together, and you can do induction and radio frequency through the skin. So yeah, the sound processor provides the electricity and the signal. So the signal flow is sound is The sound is picked up by the processor, converted into pulses through the connector to the electrodes into the nerve. So I have a computer with a wireless input connected to my nervous system, which makes me a cyborg. and So, all right, now I have to hurry, really. Being a hacker and a student of audio technology, I asked myself, how can I hack this? And I was like, might as well indulge being a cyborg and consider all this, what happened, not a bug, but a feature. And I want to extend my hearing to include ultrasonic range. And to do that, I have a Teensy 3.6, which is 180 megahertz ARM processor, microprocessor, and the audio shield that comes with it, which has a DSP chip. And when that one's overclocked, it goes to 192 kilohertz, so it can resolve up to 80 kilohertz in frequency. I'm going to skip all that about the connection to the device. But yeah, I've built a little prototype that it works. It has no connection to the sound processor yet, mainly because I don't have the sound processor yet. And it has a very cheap microphone, but I got new ones today, so see how that goes. Yeah, and then the pitch shifting is done on this thing. So I take the ultrasonic range, pitch shift it down, and make it hearable. And right now it's done simply by downsampling, but that also introduces time stretching. So what I really want to do is use a phase vocoder. Or somebody suggested yerstoday to use single sideband AM, but I'm not sure if that works because I don't only need shifting, but also like scaling. So yeah, if somebody is into pitch shifting and microprocessors, please come talk to me. Yeah. This is my prototype, and yeah, the code will of course all be open source, and my prototype is already on GitHub, but yeah, that's how you can reach me, and if you know pitch shifting, come talk to me.
Thank you.
If you want to play with the prototype, you can also come talk to me.
Okay, next up is Linux audio slowdown, an update. Fundamental, please. Apparently, we don't have the slides. There was a problem, apparently. That's disappointing. Okay. And now I'm kind of confused. I didn't see that one. Nope. Okay, then we have to do the next. Oh, that was the wrong window. Now everything is going down. Live surround sound with Ambionics. Ambisonics, sorry. Ja, den habe ich gerade zugemacht. Alles klar.
So, hello everybody. My project was the idea of having a surround sound in a live PA environment or also in a club. And I did that with 8 speakers and this encoder and decoding machine in Ambisonics. Does anybody know what that is, Ambisonics? You know it? No? Okay. So Ambisonic, you have the decoding machine on the side of the venue. So the decoding machine knows where the speakers are. And on the side of the musician's computer, you have the encoding as a plugin. I use that Matthias Kronlachner EAM plugin suite. And as a decoding machine software, I used the Fons Adriansen MDEC decoder. So the main goals are good localization and the usability in a door. And we set that up in a 13 meter diameter circle of 8 speakers. And we had a 6 speaker mono cluster in a bass for the bass, and 6 speakers for monitoring in a second order ambisonic. Yeah, the 8 speaker were third order ambisonics, I forgot that. So, okay, so we had to find out how to use these ambisonic stuff. It's ACN channel order, and SN3D, it's called MBX. It's now more or less a standard. The door, so we build, we're building a Max for Live patch to use that with Ableton Live. It wasn't there before. And of course, we need a fallback signal routing that we can push two buttons to mute groups to fall back to stereo. And yeah, that works pretty well. So that's the next point. It's the live performers, exactly. So if you are a live performer, DJ, and you come to your DJ desk and somebody tells you, hey man, you have a surround system here. You can't handle knobs and sliders and something else. So we had to make it easy for the DJ, we had that mixing desk with the auxiliary send as a mixing send to use two encoders, the FX encoder and the normal encoder for the FX encoder. You can use it with the VCA knobs on your Allen & Heath Xone mixing desk. So it was that easy. Not that easy, I think. Yeah? At the end, we recorded that stuff. And here, some hardware, some software. That is how it looks at the end. So I had that mixing desk just for fallback. I had two mute groups. I had that computer there with the running encodings or encoders. One encoder for the monitoring, one encoder for the main, and also the FX encoder going to both of the systems. And yep, that was a setup. I hope you can see that. It's three speakers at the back side, three at the front side, and left and right also one. And yeah, that was the result. We had a lot of fun with that. Enjoy. It was on a festival. It's called Zu einer Zeit in Gardelegen. It was last weekend, so I'm still a bit working on my. And I will build it up today in the Native Instrument space. So if you're interested, you can pass over and take an ear. I will have that with 8 speakers circle and just one bass. It's a small room. And we'll start at 12:30. Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. And I just got a USB stick, so we can actually have the talk we just almost missed. So let's open up these files. So enjoy yourself.
Okay. So this is just kind of a update on a older article that I did. And this article kind of centered around a sense that I had developed that things seem to be a little bit slower than they used to be when I originally joined up with the whole Linux audio area. I ended up starting to get involved around 2009 or so, and around 2016 I was like, it doesn't seem like there's quite as much activity, but that just might be a personal bias. And then I kind of realized, for like the day job and everything, I professionally analyze data, so why not take a look at just the data to see if that's the case? So I took a look at primarily the the mailing lists on Linux Audio. So that includes Linux Audio Dev, Linux Audio User, and Linux Audio Announce. And what I was able to observe is right when I entered, that was around when it was at a pretty high level of activity, and since then it had been declining relatively steadily. So for this talk, I basically took the same code that I used to analyze this here and just updated it with the most recent version. And you can see it continued on down. It's since stabilized in the past year or so, and you can see this in a bit more detail if we look at this in a logarithmic view instead. So we can see that overall the number of individuals that are participating on a month-to-month basis, at least in these locations, has declined significantly and is at least stabilized within the past year or so, but it's a lot less activity than it used to be, and it seems to more so impact the development side than the users. And I think that this is something that is a little bit risky, because if you end up with having projects that have many, many, many users, but you only have one or two active developers, then you have a risk of, well, what if something happens to that developer? What if they get burnt out? And then you can have issues with certain projects in the long term. So this is something that I see as a possible problem. Certainly people have moved to places other than just these mailing lists, but it is a side effect of there's some level of increased fragmentation, and the activity that I see in those other locations does not seem to necessarily collaborate or collaborate the shifts, just moving people rather than some people leaving faster than new people are arriving. And this is something that isn't necessarily obvious if you're just looking at the rate of posting, because the people that have stuck around are pretty darn vocal. So you can see that while the number of posts have gone down, it's not quite as much in terms of the number of active individuals, at least in these areas. So this is something that I think is interesting to keep track of and to be mindful of, to tell the community, hey, make sure that we keep attracting new individuals so that we can keep up the pace and continue development into the future. So that's basically that.
Wow, that went quick. We still would have 2 minutes. So, yeah. So the next one is live coding audio in C. Do I have slides from you? Like, really, where are they?
I've got them on a USB stick if you need it.
Yes, please. Very good, prepared. Oh yeah, well, we should probably unmount this. There you go. Have fun.
Thanks. So I'm a software developer, musician, and I like programming in lots of different languages. But for audio, I prefer C because it's quite efficient. So I've written this little environment in using Jack. The process callback in the Jack framework delegates to a function pointer, which I can change at runtime. The main thread allocates a large memory area that the function callback can be used, and then the main thread changes the function pointer when I want it to, which can change the algorithm that's making the sound. So to reload code, you use libdl. dlopen opens a shared library and gives you a handle to the library code. dlsim looks up a symbol in the code and gives you a function pointer. But there's a race condition, because you don't want to unload running code, because then it'll just crash. So you need to keep the running code still running while loading the fresh code. So you need a double buffering strategy. And the problem is you can't just overwrite the shared object and reload it using the same file name, because libdl caches quite aggressively. So you have to make a physical copy of the file in a separate location and then open that one. And it's enough to have two. So to detect file changes, you can use the iNotify system in Linux. You open a handle to a directory and watch for changes. I'm watching for changes of files that are closed after having been opened for write. So if the source code changes, then I call out to make to recompile it. And if the shared library is changed, I reload it and swap the function pointers. So I'll be performing with this tonight. Come along, it's at Native Space in Schlesisches Tor area. Yeah, thanks.
Thank you. Another very quick one. We are running through these talks, but very interesting. So, next up is Motion Composer. And this one I have. Here you go. Oh, audio? Okay, cool. Then have fun.
Enough time. So I stand here so I can change the slides. Oh, people can see me. Okay, hi, I'm not that guy. I'm that guy, jumping over a... That's what I used to do for a living. Yeah. So I'm not a musician, I'm a dancer, choreographer. I'm leading a project called Motion Composer. We're developing a device for persons with disabilities, motion, the main sensors are video, stereo vision, video motion tracking technology. And I work with a bunch of composers to make intuitive mappings, give you the feeling you're hearing your body in motion. The goal being particularly working with people with disabilities, but artists as well may well be the same people. I'm a dancer, I said that. So the device sits on a table and outputs music. If I had a little more time, I would make you all get up and dance. And the reason is, Nietzsche said, we hear music with our muscles. And the importance of this, we tend to think we hear music with our ears, that it's something we listen to. But this vastly underappreciates the value of music in human experience. Dance and music have been with human beings for roughly 100,000 years, long before we have been speaking. So my point, it's a very intuitive aspect of human existence, and that's ultimately what this project's about. So we had a thing on the market. We have roughly €1 million funding from Thüringer Aufbaubank to develop this with help of Fraunhofer, EOF in Jena. And we had this thing a couple of years ago using a so-called active stereo vision technology. This is time of flight. Now we're developing the next generation we call the 3.0, and it uses a passive stereo vision technology. It doesn't have, it's easier to use. You have a tablet instead of a keyboard, screen, and mouse. The difference between active and passive stereo vision, is this something known to you guys? Maybe not. So the most people who do stereo vision 3D tracking use an active system. So there's a projector. It's usually projecting infrared light, which you can't see, and measuring either time of flight or a structured light technology. So we're working with guys to make a passive. That means just two cameras, which see like your eyes see, has advantages. If you've ever used like the Kinect, you may know that it's pretty hopeless on stage because it's distracted by other infrared light sources. So if sunlight comes into the therapy room, you couldn't use an active system. There are other problems with it. Okay, quick to mapping, my favorite subject. We look at mapping the body in four areas. Activity, how you move, direction of motion called flow, or quantity of movement. Location, where you are in the space. shape, form, position, and gesture, which can be thought of as a combination of usually an active action and a position. So this is kind of how we do it. We have a 3D tracking, which generates the blob, in other words, in this case, the stencil. And then we superimpose the 2D image inside the blob. And this allows us to track the latency tolerant parameters, such as where you are in the room. So you can't go, I can't go from here to over there in 0 seconds. There's always, so that's not latency critical. Whereas activity is highly latency critical. So we track the activity aspects using pure 2D tracking, and then use the blob only when it's absolutely necessary to do, thank you, to do location and shape tracking. And then we use this in therapeutic applications. Oliver Sacks pointed out there are many people in the world who respond to music, and that's all they respond to. There are people with demence who can be reached only through musical experience. We stimulate people into movement. We encourage free expression, creativity in persons who may be disabled. And we encourage inclusion and working with groups. That's the end of my talk.
Thank you very much. Very impressive. So let's have the next one, which is new stuff in drum gizmo. I think that was without slides, if I'm not mistaken. You need to change the laptop. Okay, then you grab my cable. Okay, what this HDMI here? This is DisplayPort. It's the lightning dance. Okay, here we go. Have fun.
So I hope that it will actually work. So we are part of the developers of Drum Gizmo. So first, who of you actually knows what Drum Gizmo is? Can I see a show of hands? Okay, some of you. For the others, Drum Gizmo is a drum plugin, and we aim at sounding as realistic as possible. And Bent is actually the main developer of Drum Gizmo. And we want to show you some new advances. So basically, when we say we want to sound as realistic as possible, the plugin has 13 outputs, which you can see here. 16 outputs, sorry. And those are basically the microphones from sampling the drum kit. So we want to now show you some new stuff, which includes humanization and bleed control and disc streaming.
OK, first of all, we did a presentation a few years back, and continuously users have been poking us to do disc streaming because many of the drum kits are huge on disc, as you can see here. Can you read this? This up here in our right, okay. It says 8.4 gigabytes, which is our currently biggest drum kit, so that's imposing a problem. So the old version used to store everything in RAM before actually playing the samples. So this new feature, which you can see here in the lower left corner, is disc streaming. So we can actually set the maximum allowed number of megabytes allowed to be used by the plugin. We can do that. We can just try setting it to something. let's do it, just something, and we apply it, and we can see here it reloads the drum kit. And what it does is actually just preloads a small amount of data from each file, and then when you start playing it, it will read the rest of the file dynamically, one blob at a time. So it only keeps the precast version of the data in memory. The new stuff, which hasn't been released yet, this streaming is already released a year ago, I think, so you can use that today. Hopefully in a few weeks we'll be releasing a couple of new features. One here is a standard deviation on the sample selection. It has been fixed so far, so that means when the engine tries to figure out which sample to play, it will randomly select one and then do a normalized random function to figure out how should we move a bit away from it to not play exactly the same one. But now you can actually control it, so you can have it wider, so you can have it playing samples that are further away in velocity than the one mapping exactly. The other new feature, which is we're not really sure how it should work yet, but it tries to move the notes in time. To be able to move a note in time, we can delay it, but to be able to move it forward in time, actually, also we have a fixed delay inserted into the plugin. So if you want to play with DrumGizmo on a live drum kit, you definitely want to disable this because it will introduce a delay in the signal. You can control in the timing humanizer. You can control how tight the drummer should be, and also you can control laid backness. So you can have the drummer play on beforehand or backwards on the back on the beat. As an example, I tried. We could push up the standard deviation quite a bit here, and I have the tightness set to zero here. So this should be a very untight drummer. Hopefully, if you have audio. I have a metronome running, so you can compare the drum beat with the metronome. I don't know if you can hear. We don't have audio here. Can you turn it up a bit, please? We have no audio over here. Okay, just turn it up then. You hear it drifts off the metronome. We can control then the timing regain is how fast will the drummer regain the actual position, so we can turn it up a bit. And now the drummer will catch up with the beat. I thought about calling this a bait, impossible bass player mode. So that's it, yes. Also to demonstrate the to demonstrate the sample selection here in the standard deviation, I have here just a snare fill playing single strokes in 16th notes. Now I have put the standard deviation over here way higher, so you can hear that it actually fluctuates in velocity a lot more. This would be a very inexperienced drummer trying to play something. We can make it even worse, perhaps. So this sounds very non-mechanical, non-robotic. That's the whole purpose of this problem, this plugin, to do something that sounds human, even though all the velocities are the same and the timing is perfect in the MIDI input. So that's it. Thank you. One last thing. This year also we brought drumsticks, so if you don't have one and you would like one, please come by and see us.
Thank you very much. Do you just have to unplug, replug a little bit? One drummer, a conference. Okay, so is this, hello? Oh, yeah, what's, that's interesting. Okay, here we have the overview. Oh, wow, and that's big. Okay, news from the Soundscape renderer. I think is that Steiner, yeah? Okay, super. Oh, you're my personal hero. Thanks, man. F5. The key is F5. If you wanted to go into presentation mode, F5. Thank you. Here you go.
Thank you. Hello, everyone. My name is Matthias Geier, and I'll tell you some news from the Soundscape renderer. Can you all hear me? Who of you already knows the Soundscape renderer? Very few people who has actually used it. Even fewer. So I hope this will massively change after today or after in 5 minutes. The Soundscape renderer is a free and open source software for spatial audio reproduction. You see here the graphical user interface of it. And we can set up audio scenes that consist of different sound sources, and those sound sources can be moved around. And here we see two screenshots actually, and they are playing the same sound scene, so the same position of all sound sources. But the difference is the reproduction system. The one to the bottom left is using binaural reproduction, using it's meant for headphone use. And the other one is showing a circle of 56 loudspeakers using wave field synthesis. And the whole idea of the Soundscape renderer is that you have the same scene, but you can use it with different reproduction systems. We have a bunch of them implemented. For example, binaural synthesis, wave field synthesis, vector-based amplitude panning, ambisonics amplitude panning, and some others, probably more to come at some point. It runs on Linux and macOS, and there are already some efforts to have it run on Windows. It partly runs on Windows, not everything yet. It uses the Check audio connection kit, which of course all of you know. And it has a graphical user interface, as you could see in the previous slide, using Qt. It has a network interface. Everything can be controlled via network messages. And what I forgot to put up there, it also has support for some head trackers. So if you have headphones with a head tracking device, if you're lucky and your device is supported, then you can use it directly, and the sound reproduction will be changed accordingly to your head position or head orientation rather. Just have a look at the homepage. That's best. There is a list of head trackers there, or look at the I don't know in the help screen or something, or ask me afterwards. I can tell you. It's free and open source software, and you can download it and play around with it. There is one important thing though. We are currently working on a new release, which is not yet out. So we have a Debian package, for example. If you get this is kind of outdated. So you should use for now the master branch of our Git repository, but in the next few, I don't know, weeks, probably we will make a new release, and then everything should be nicely up to date. What I wanted to mention here, especially in this Linux audio conference, and since many of you are able to use programming instead of just clicking with your mouse somewhere, the renderers of the SSL can also be used as a library. Each one can be used as its own library, which still uses multi-threading, so it's kind of efficient. In this case, you don't have check, you don't have a GUI, you don't have network, you don't have scene files. It's just a simple simple library. You give audio in and control data in and get audio out.
License?
Pardon?
What license?
It's GPL version 3. One example for that is we can use it as a PD external. For example, we can create a wave field synthesis plugin. This is available for the other renderers too, but in this example, it's the wave field synthesis. We give it, the three is the number of inputs, then we have a setup file that has the positions of the loudspeakers and a pre-filter which we need in wave field synthesis. And if we would put another number there, this would be the number of threads. So we can, for each instance of this external, we can select the number of threads we want to be using for audio processing. Then we connect it to the outputs. In this case, there are 56 outputs in this setup. Then we connect any audio input as whatever we want, and then we can send some control messages. Okay. That's it. It's also in the Git repository. For now, you have to compile it manually. But if someone knows how to use the Deakin system for PD, please talk to me and please explain how I could put it there, because then it would be much easier to use, I guess. Then there are. Just a few. I wanted to mention a few limitations, which are at the same time steps for us, which we want to do in the future. The main thing for now, every renderer is limited to the horizontal plane, so sound sources can only move in the horizontal plane. We of course would like to extend this to full 3D. Also, the sound scenes we normally we now use have only static positions, and we would like to have a sound scene that can also contain sound source movements. There are some other things, but I guess I'm out of time. Thanks for your attention.
Thank you very much. That was very interesting. Oh, yeah, yeah. So let's have the next talk, which is Norns is many sound instruments. Artfu. Ah, there you go. Sound is here. What else?
Yeah. Okay. All right. So I wanted to do a quick intro of Norns, which is a device by Monam. I don't know if anyone knows their company. They used to make mainly the grid, which I think is the most famous thing they ever made. And they slowly moved into also making devices that, this was a pure controller, moved into making devices that also generate sound, the most recent stuff before Norns was a couple of Eurorack modules, which allows you to use the grid, for example, with Eurorack synthesizers, which is quite nice. And the new device is called Norns. It's basically a small portable computer to generate music. The stuff that runs on it is all open. Everything is on GitHub if you want to have a look. Artur will do a demo, because he's a lot more musical than I am, to show you what it does.
Neither am I, actually.
Well,
it's just something I came up with for the talk.
Norns runs SuperCollider as the sound engine right now, which is scripted by Lua. So in fact, you just design some kind of a sound engine, and then for the sequencing and logic, you write a script that will interface with various peripheral devices here. So as you can see, I'm not sure we can probably scroll this down a bit. The back panel, no. So yeah, it's got four USB ports, which you can use for plugging in MIDI devices, HID HID devices, and there's controllers by Monom. Well, and yeah, it's also got knobs and buttons for like controlling the scripts. And yeah, I'm going to show the classic Monom MLR patch, which has been ported to Nuance by its designer, Brian Crabtree. So let's see. It does, what I'm going to do is cut the samples, which I have made up during 1 hour challenge before. So basically, there's no sound for whatever reason. Yeah, now it works. So here we've got two samples, which we can cut by pressing buttons. Set loop points. Change the speed. And it also can record audio using the
provided inputs. Wait, I'll hold the mic for you.
Yeah. And we've got a lot of other patches. For instance, an Euclidean written generator. The hardware is not open, but sorry, yeah, I'm going to turn this down. It's based on Raspberry Pi compute module, and the software is free, so you can run it on Raspberry Pi. Given that, yeah, so you basically have to add the screen, the knobs and buttons. And yeah, use the controllers, and you will be able to run this software and use the same sound engines that I used in here.
Yeah, so the community for Monom, which has worked with the grids before, there's already people working on it, making it easy to install on a Raspberry itself. We are focusing on making this work better for everyone who got one. We've only sold 100 so far. It's a very limited batch. But there's other people who are taking all the software and making it available to run easily on a Raspberry Pi with PySound, for example. So that will be no problem. And we're also open to questions in that regard. No issue.
Thank you very much. So, finally, also another nice piece of hardware. He wants to say two words.
We're going to set up a little demo, impromptu demo outside. So if you're done with the talks here, you can come outside to the...
So now up Patroneo, simple pattern sequencer. And actually, he's got 10 minutes by submitting two talks. And yeah, I sorted them alphabetically somehow. So yeah. HDMI. Yeah.
Gobbly, 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 gobbly.
Oh, there we go. So, is this all right?
Yeah,
mit der GitHub Page anfangen. Nee, das ist irgendwie eine komische Auflösung. If any XFCE developers are watching this, you might make notes. This is kind of odd. Very odd. That looked good. Okay. Here we go.
Yeah, that's a challenge, 3 input. My name is Niels Hilbricht. I'm presenting a small sequencer I wrote in the recent times, which is called Patroneo, which is Esperanto for the word pattern. So it's a pattern sequencer, and the main goal is to be simple and easy to access and fast to learn, because I'm a teacher and it's for my pupils, so it's reduced in size and in features. Everything I show is on my page, which is hilbricht.net. I think it's in the online log. So, and there's GitHub pages for all the things I do. Let's see it. Yeah, I think a bit more volume, please. Okay, so it's in the bottom. You can see a pattern. You can simply click in and deactivate and activate notes. There's just one. It's not a chromatic scale, so not all 127 MIDI notes, 128 are available. You set the scale. You can either put in numbers here or choose a predefined like major, minor, or whatever. And each track in the top has a pattern. And at the moment we hear the bass, which is this, and here's some lead answer. You can't see, there's a scrolling cursor, you can't see because it's too dark here. So basically you put in the rectangles, you can make them a bit longer, and you can change the velocity by scrolling up and down. It's all jack MIDI output. There are some synthesizers running in the background. And basically that's it's tempo. Not everything you can adjust, but at least how many measures you want in your song, how many steps you want in the pattern and subdivisions, standard stuff. But the most complex function is here are little numbers, -3, +4, and whatever. And these are modal transpositions. So if you mouse wheel here, we can hear it now. Can we a bit louder? You hear this one chord getting higher and higher, but it's just one pattern. It's just a modal transposition. So it keeps the notes are staying within the scale I set here. Okay. Of course, a lot of convenient stuff. Oh, I have 2 minutes. Okay, I'm a bit fast. Convenient stuff like looping. Let's see. For easier editing. So this is basically how you work in the software. And then hidden in context menus are things like invert steps, but if I do that now, it's a mess because everything switches on. Okay. That was all steps on. Okay, all steps off. Yeah, that's the sequencer. It's a thing you rarely hear, I think, but it's done, it's finished. Version 1.0 and only one or two bug fixes before I announce a release. So, done. Not an endless cycle of development hell. Oh yeah, and if you're interested, I'm a big fan of session management. I used the last 30 seconds to promote the non-session manager. If you have software that runs standalone in a standalone mode, please consider using the non-session protocol. It's maybe 1 or 2 days of work, and it's very, very useful, especially if you load audio files in your program, sample files, or some things like that. Yeah, okay. Next 5 minutes, let me close that, because that's a Chromebook and I only have limited CPU power. That's Carla. Thank you, Carla. That's the... okay, I don't have to close it all on my own, of course. Okay. Abort. Oh, no. Okay. Next talk. It's very hard to move the mouse here. Okay, next talk is called the... where's my GitHub page? It's gone. Doesn't matter. It's called... Go. The Random Parallel Player, which does exactly what it says. It plays back audio clips randomly, but in parallel, so in tracks. So this is one of the clips of the demo you will hear shortly. Oops, something wrong happened. Why? It worked before, just 5 minutes before. Okay, one try. If that doesn't work, no. Okay, so there are short audio clips. I imagine you know how four to the floor beats sound like. This is so simple, it's only a command line player. Oh, that's impossible. I used it 2 minutes ago.
Did you move some files?
One moment. Yeah, I closed Jack. Never closed Jack. No, I didn't. Stop. Clients are connected, maybe. Oh. Something is still hanging in the background here. Yeah, please fix non-session. Stop. Emergency exit. Oh, shit. Okay, exit real-time mode. That's better. Okay. No. Yeah, no. Okay, it's a very cool program. You have to believe me. Thank you very much.
Thank you. All these problems. He'll probably have it running in 2 minutes, outside maybe or something. Maybe he can give a quick demo. The concept sounded interesting in any case. So, yeah. Got to plug myself in. Okay, Harry, It's your turn. You send slides, and you, yeah, you send. I have them here. Just a second. And, F5. I love that key. Today I learned. Okay. Keys up and down. Select. You have the microphone. Have fun.
Thank you. Hey guys. I'll try and not kill myself on stage here while there's things going on. Hey guys, most of you know me from the OpenAV project. Harry Van Haren is my name. I am going to do a very quick update on the OpenAV Control App project. So for those of you who don't know this library or haven't heard of it yet, it's a C library to access modern USB devices. Think along the lines of that cool drum pad machine controller or push 2 or whatever you saw in the shop recently that was really shiny. That's the type of devices that Control App targets. And the idea is to make it easy to integrate those with Linux audio, with open source audio software. So the update here that I'm going to give is basically what devices have I been hacking, what are we trying to achieve, show some shiny pictures, and hopefully get you guys excited to try and implement some controller stuff in your own applications, your own programs, try and get some users on board and actually get rolling this out. So what progress do we really have? There's a bunch more devices supported. It's not a huge list, but it's growing, so I'm pretty happy with that. I'll talk a little bit about software support, so we're getting a few more demo applications, a few more cool proof of concept things running. So skipping quickly on, what is actually running right now? Well, this was taken at a hackathon in Dublin a couple of weeks ago. We have a bunch of music-y gear with shiny lights that now controls Mix, which is there in the background. So as part of a PR that's currently on the Mix, one of the Mix branches, we can actually integrate the Mix DJ software with these controllers. You can see it even draws to the screen. It gives us some nice little visuals and things like that. What else do we have? We have this guy. It's kind of hard to see, but look, there's shiny lights. We have some more of these kind of things. Again, you don't know quite what it is, but it has more shiny lights. So finally, we also have some support with this, which is a mod. So the Control App library is not just on normal laptops and stuff. You can run this on an embedded system. What's being drawn to the screen right there is actually coming from a mod. Leave your laptop at home, run your software with a USB controller directly on your mod. So there's a bunch of stuff like that going on. I'll talk a little bit about software support. So I mentioned Mix before. This is the Mix DJ software. This is prototyping of some DJ interfaces on the hardware. If we look a little bit closer, we can see that other types of devices, we can repaint roughly the same stuff. This is a zoom in, so you can see we have access to our hot cues, we have our playhead, we have a bunch of filters, there's a pitch over there, it tells you the name of the track, the type of stuff. Waveforms are in progress, so there will be more shiny stuff here in future, don't worry. Last but not least, there's a wee little controller external, or a controller external for PD, correct? Still work in progress, but was demoed yesterday and segfaulted, was demoed again 5 minutes later and did not segfault. So lots of progress on these things. Yeah, if you're interested in implementing controller in your piece of software, please do come talk to me and we can talk about, look, how hard or easy is it to implement this. One experience from earlier this LAC is Philippa from the Carla host talked to me. We sat outside and within 15 minutes controller was integrated and you turn a hardware knob and a software parameter on an LV2 plugin hosted inside Carla would be automated. So this stuff is working, it is available to be used. I think the APIs are relatively stable, they're relatively easy to use. There won't be too much breakage in future, so if you're saying, hey, I'm kind of an early adopter, I want to see what's going on here, then now is a good time to say, yeah, okay, let's talk. I think that is my last question. Nope, my last slide, even. Any questions or anything? Thank you.
So he's still got over a minute. Anybody got questions?
Yes. The setup running it on a mod, is that with custom firmware, or have you made an LV2 plugin that communicates with the controllers?
Very good question. Both. So it is possible to SSH into a mod, and you can push your own cross-compiled binaries onto it. That's how I tested this stuff. In theory, and this is in theory, there is a binary over there as an LV2 plugin that's cross-compiled for mod, which should be able to run on a mod. And I asked Jan from the mod project to bring a mod along so I could test it. Ryanair cabin baggage, I couldn't bring my own. Sorry. But thanks. That's everything for me. Bye.
Any other questions? Just do one.
Thanks. Is Maximilian here? Hi. So I have a question. I have a question for you that sort of relates to me. So we had an interest in cochlear implants.
Sorry,
Sorry. Are there any questions to this lightning talk right now? No. We still have some one last bit, if I'm not mistaken, to go. Also, in my own capacity, I need. Thank you, Harry.
Thank you. I
need to ask all the lightning talk holders. Sorry. Thank you. I need to ask all the Lightning Talk people who had a lecture right now, if they haven't signed the forms yet, please come to me, because we need you to have signed the forms. And yeah, that's actually the last real Lightning Talk it was. And now we're going to hear something, hopefully. Is Stefan here? Stefan? Ah, there we go. Because he actually told me that he didn't play everything, so we're now getting some more teasers from Spectrumoth, because there was some more to be witnessed. Enjoy. Since this was the last lightning talk, actually we're letting this him run until he's bored or you are bored.
Yeah? Hello? Yeah? Okay, you can hear me? So, the last presentation on Specmorph had little demo, so I tried to fix this now. So, the first thing is we can here control the morphing with the GUI. So we have, on this side, is pan flute. On this side is Mirko. And if I take the mouse, okay, so I take another instrument, take a cello on this side.
Okay.
And then I mentioned this feature that SpecMorf can add a few copies of the same signal. I show you this one. Like this is only one cello playing. That's like two copies of the signal, and now we can go to like five. And of course it also works with a morphing. And for the morphing, I can also use LFO as input, so I don't have to use the mouse at all. And here I can adjust the frequency of the LFO. Without unison again. And with unison. Okay, I can take two new instruments like bass trombone and organ, for instance. Okay, it will distort if I press too many keys. What else? Okay, right now we use the volume envelope from the instrument, which basically means it starts and then it stays at the same volume. But we can also use a custom volume envelope. And for instance, this is not what a bass trombone normally does or an organ. But we can have this. Okay, one thing I can show you is if I just I've explained that SpecMorf models the sound as normal sine waves and noise. And what you can do is, this is actually both of it, but you can do just the noise. It will be very silent, but I can boost this up. So this is the noise that a cello makes and the noise that a bass trombone makes, and we morph that. Yeah, the thing is, you need a sound which has the same pitch. Like if you create new instruments, you say, okay, this is 440 hertz sound. So you would need a dog that is at 440 hertz, and then it would work. Okay. Okay. Okay, this I think the last thing I show to you is that we can do that with four sounds. It's not loud enough. Ah, okay. Saxophone. Trumpet. Alto flute and Mirko again. And now we can. Thank you. Yeah, okay. Thank you. That was the missing live demo for yesterday. And if you want to come here and play with it, then you can do that.
Okay. Thank you for giving us this nice additional demo. I think it sounds awesome. So this was the Lightning Talk track. I hope you enjoyed it and had your fun.